Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a very special episode of Grain of Truth. My name is David Innes. I am the host and creator of the program. Sometimes when recording Grain of Truth, things go wrong. In this particular case, the main recording device and the backup recording device both failed. So this episode is a missing episode. This is a case where the archives have deleted certain sections of this particular episode. So we've had to go to the Grain of Truth Restoration Society in order to be able to pick up the small amateur recordings off the radio and off the live broadcast in order to piece together the best version that we can have of episode 12. And I appreciate the work of the Restoration Society, as this episode would not have existed without them. I hope you enjoy.
Set your phases to fun, because it's time for Grain of Truth. Please welcome your host, David Innes.
Hello and welcome to Grain of Truth, the show that forgets the truth's birthday. Your grains of truth today. Apple is now supplying electricity to homes in the Silicon Valley with their latest product, the iSocket. Brilliant stuff, yeah. That's just number one. There's three more of these beauties.
Bring it.
All right. Australian dairy farms near the coastline are said to be yogurt by sea. Wordplay. A cannon that fires at berets is said to be a cap gun. And finally, acid jazz can be neutralized when you drop the bass. Wah, wah, wah.
It's funny because it's funky.
5 points to Mr. Innes.
That was both a music and chemistry joke. We're the leading music and chemistry jokes podcast on the internet. To introduce our panelists for this episode, it's over to the Pythagorean triad, Christian Bazzari.
Thank you, David. From the Robertson Girls' School representing domestic science, it's Anna Renzenbury.
Thank you very much.
From the University of Tasmania, Launceston campus, representing monsters, it's Scott McAteer. From Victoria University, Wellington campus, representing television, it's Lucy Schmidt. And finally, last but not least, from RMIT University, representing performing arts, it's Stacey Taylor.
Thank you.
The rules for Grain of Truth are simple. I award points to the panelists for their responses to my ridiculous, absurd questions, scenarios, and topics. Whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is the Golden Betamax player.
I won it!
We had it left over from the original 1980s Grain of Truth, hosted by Tony Barber. It was on every week. It was great. Before we begin the quiz, here's a small challenge for everyone. Can you name the grain of truth that connects all four of our panelists' first names? That's Anna, Scott, Lucy, and Stacey. And we'll come back to this at the end of the program. But I'll give you a clue. Oh, that's your clue. Oh.
It's not Ebba.
But let's now begin with round one, which is called the 90-second TED Talk. Each player must give a short speech on a topic relating to their field in 90 seconds. At 60 seconds, they'll hear this noise. And at the 90-second mark, they'll hear this noise, at which they must eventually cease and desist. We'll start with Anna Renzenbrink, who's first, representing domestic science, and your topic is crumpets are the thinking woman's crumpet. Anna, your time begins now.
Thank you. So crumpets are from a very British tradition of Welsh griddle cakes and Irish soda breads and cucumber sandwiches. They speak of manor houses and comfort and rumpy-pumpy with my lord or my lady. So why would a thinking woman want a crumpet as opposed to a muffin or a bagel?
We know that crumpet is British slang for a hot guy or gal. There's a lovely bit of crumpet there. And crumpet fever, therefore, is an attraction to British people or a fetish for the English accent. Oh, aye. But when did crumpets become so sexy and therefore so appealing to the sensuous woman? It is, after all, just a bread product popped into the toaster. Well, I don't mean to be lewd, but the bottom of a well-toasted crumpet should be a smooth golden brown, while the top should be spread with glossy, creamy butter, which melts into all the holes, so when you take a bite, the butter runs down your chin and forms a puddle on your heaving, corseted bosom, etc., etc. Well, that was a bit lewd. A thinking woman is a sensuous woman in need of a crumpet, and even Jane Austen knew this as she wrote that famous proposal in Pride and Prejudice. "You must allow me to tell you how ardently I admire and love you, Miss Bennet. Would you like another crumpet?"
Thank you very much, Anna. And now it's over to our next speaker, who is Scott McAteer, representing Monsters, and his topic is Shakespearean monsters are both eloquent and terrifying. Scott McAteer, your time starts now.
All right, let's have a look at a few of Shakespeare's monsters and see if they are eloquent and terrifying. Monster number one in Julius Caesar. Yes, there are zombies in Julius Caesar. They're one of the signs of the impending assassination. A lioness hath whelped in the streets, and graves have yawned and yielded up their dead. Now, the zombies don't have any lines, but they're a bit scary. So in terms of escalation of threat, they're worse than a lioness giving birth. So that's pretty scary. But they're not eloquent. Apparently there was probably a scene cut, which was just, brains in iambic pentameter. Fun fact, there was a Thessalian witch who often raised the dead during Caesar's time, and she also later crops up in Dante's Inferno. Monster number two, Caliban and the Tempest. Now let's have a listen to Caliban. "In dreaming, the clouds methought would open, and show riches ready to drop upon me, that when I waked, I cried to dream again." Now Caliban isn't terrifying, but the idea of being Caliban is pretty terrifying. Monster number three, Nick Bottom in Midsummer Night's Dream. Now through Puck's magic, Nick Bottom becomes a were-donkey or ass-man. Terrifying? Good old Nick Bottom? Never. Except for how he reacts when he comes out of his were-donkey state. Imagine that instead of being a donkey, he was turned into a part man, part wolf. "The eyes of man hath not heard, the ear of man hath not seen, man's hand is not able to taste, his tongue to conceive, nor his heart to report what my dream was." Those are the words of a wolf man who's just killed and eaten all his friends, and he loved it. Monster number four, the witches in Macbeth, the most terrifying of all. Because they didn't just see the future, they made the future. They brought down a king and turned a hero into a monster with words. "All hail Macbeth, who shall be king hereafter." That's just five little words. "Who shall be king hereafter." It led to a murdered king, slaughtered children, betrayed friends, a woman's suicide, and an ecologically unsound deforestation for camouflage purposes. Five little words. Eloquent and terrifying.
Thank you, Scott. Our next speaker is Lucy Schmidt, representing television, and your topic is the ultimate game show. Lucy Schmidt, your time starts now.
Million Dollar Minute's ratings spiked when lovely single mum Lisa decided to come back for the million, and didn't our hearts fall when she missed out by only one question and lost over $400,000 in prize money in 1 second. So, my first ingredient has to be an underdog. Complement that with big stakes, houses, cars, lots of beautiful tax-free cash, and we're almost there. Add something that can be played along with at home and a quirk that makes it original, and we get my pitch. Aussie Battler comes out and is introduced to fellow contestants Tony Abbott and Gina Reinhardt, and already we're rooting for our Battler to be the champ. A few warm-up questions and a rule is introduced that you must remove an item of clothing for a wrong answer, the quirk. Huge amounts of cash are put up for guessing the price of household items at Aldi. Our battler's doing really well while Tony's down to his budgie smugglers. Introduce the song segment, where the voice judges come in and assign each contestant a song. Gina struts around in bra and knickers, almost taking it out with her rendition of Money, 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 but she's pipped at the post by our battler's emotionally riveting version of You're the Voice by Johnny Farnham. Raise the stakes again when a wheel is spun.
Tony lands on nipple piercing and is quickly escorted out the back. Gina lands on pay charity 5 million and our battler wins a house on the Sydney Harbour. The gold confetti falls, Tony returns with his nipple ring and they all dance together as the credits roll. Now tell me that you wouldn't watch that.
I was just wondering if anyone actually had any must-see game shows or those sort of reality TV, because I hate reality TV with a passion, but I did remember really liking The Mole, and I have no idea why I loved The Mole as a kid. Maybe it's because I thought I knew who The Mole was, and then, nah.
My favourite game show was always The Krypton Factor, which is a very, very old, old TV show, which had lots of different challenges. There was basically a lot of intellectual ones and one physical one. So you came to resent these very intelligent people, and then you saw them fall in the mud and suffer.
Actually, I will change my answer because you just remind me of something dear to my childhood, which was Amazing with James Sherry, mainly because I, again, like all kids, we knew where those keys were. Stupid contestants. If only we were on, but you know. I wasn't a school captain of a primary school.
Did you have Top Town in Australia?
What was that?
Top Town was a game show where small towns in New Zealand competed against each other.
Like in actual physical battle?
In physical battle.
God.
I'm hearing the Star Trek fight music as these people from Dunedin and Queenstown. I suppose they're not small towns.
No, they're smaller towns than that. I've got to brag that in 1976, when I was 5 years old, Woodville, where I hail from, not proudly, came second place in the whole of Top Town.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Celebrity.
Yeah. I'll take that applause, not that I deserved it.
Our final speaker for the first round is Stacey Taylor, representing Performing Arts, and your topic is The Essentials of Musical Theatre. Stacey, your time starts now.
So I've been charged with identifying the fundamental things that must appear in every musical. But now, acknowledging that the analysis and criticism of musical theatre is a subjective endeavour, here at least are the elements that I would miss were someone careless enough to leave them out. So, in no particular order, someone doing the splits. No explanation necessary. One chorus member leaning their elbow on the shoulder of another to suggest camaraderie. A plucky street urchin. Now, this requirement is regardless of the time and place within which the story is set. People doing the hand jive. Workers whistling and resuming their tasks after being forced to abruptly end their singing and dancing due to the entrance of an authority figure. Now, at least one broom should be involved, and again, this is irrespective of the working environment within which the scene is set. A costume of petals around a human face. At least one number set in a bar, one in a jail, and one by the gym lockers. Again, the setting and era, yada, yada, yada. Chorus members leaning into a semicircle with bouncy knees and clicking the fingers of one hand into the centre of it. Bonus points if they join said hands and dance around in a wheel. And finally, the flipping of a chair by standing one foot on the seat of it, one on the back of it, and deliberately overbalancing. However, I will accept any furniture-based dance moves. Thank you.
I must ask now the obligatory question. I love the fact that you said yes, as if it's like, oh God, what grilling am I going to get now?
That was meant to be enthusiastic.
Oh, was it?
Yes!
Yay! Yay, questions and banter and such. What is your favourite musical, if you have one?
Oh, well, it's difficult for me. I'm a bit of a West Side Story girl, but I will confess to Oklahoma.
No.
Can we still be friends?
I love the fact, I don't know if you've picked that up, audience, but there was distinct outrage in the audience. How dare you like Oklahoma? My favourite musical of Little Shop of Horrors is definitely my favourite. And Sweeney Todd. Any other favourite musicals on the panel?
I grew up watching Rocky Horror Picture Show a lot, like a lot as a child. So
explains a lot about you.
Totally does.
I think
the grade 5 Spenceley Street Primary School production that I was involved in called Germs has to be my favourite because we were all germs inside the human body and there was a coup and we were all infecting the human body, and then we had the realisation that if the human died, we would all die too. And the songs, they were just beautiful.
Sounds quite apocalyptic. Did the human die and then you realise too late?
Yeah, and then for some reason there was one song which was like The Great Pretender. You know that?
Yeah.
Every other song was germ related and original except that one.
Well, they had to get something for the poster. Yeah. And for the TV ads, clearly.
But I know. I sing a little bit?
Yes. We're all waiting.
Germs are never afraid, never, ever afraid. They don't worry when things don't go right. They keep infecting by day or by night.
Fabulous.
That is now my new favourite musical.
Say that the costume was yellow skivvies? And
the same as my soccer costume.
Tights and bloomers, and we all had a ribbon, like rhythmic gymnastics have a ribbon.
You would have fitted right in New Zealand Top Town.
Germs is opening up in Northcote in next week. Now that's the end of round one, so it's over to a score update from Christian. Scores, please.
Thank you, David. At the end of that round, in the lead, by a face surrounded by petals, it's Stacey Taylor.
Very much.
Next round is the analysis and application round. Our panel is divided into teams of two and must apply their skills to an application task. Anna and Scott, I'll be challenging you to tell me as much as you know about these ancient battles that we have since been lost in history. They haven't quite made the history books. The first one is the war to start all wars.
Well, I think that was classical Greece.
It was. And it was interesting because it was the first open conflict. It started in a very straightforward matter over an argument over wine.
Yes, between Zeus and Aphrodite.
That's right. And Zeus rallied his forces.
And Aphrodite just turned some handsome young men into cows.
So it was also the war to start all barbecues.
That's right. Happy times.
The next one is the Battle of the Boffins.
Battle of the Boffins. That was at the Collingwood Town Hall computer swap meet, I think, in 1997.
Horrific damage done. I mean, it was 1997, so there were modems flying everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. And people
couldn't hear the screams over that weird dial tone.
And they were so angry because there were people with Hotmail addresses.
It was Hotmail versus Yahoo. That was the real division.
It was terrible.
Started over a messenger comment.
And it ended up in a dance number, not unlike the dance in West Side Story, in The Sharks and the Jets.
And finally, the 46-minute war.
Oh, the 46-minute war. That was one of the early 20th century minor conflicts which escalated into the Great War.
The car park at Northland.
That's right. Very early days of the car park.
Oh, that's right. And I still haven't forgiven you, Scott, for taking my park.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott and Emma. Stacey and Lucy, I'll be challenging you to describe these little-known Victorian towns, where they're situated, and about their heritage and things to do there, if you can.
Do that, New Zealanders. Yes.
The first one is Upper Bumduff.
The town name originated from the women's inexplicable inability to get pregnant in the town. Many... I do not believe this reaction. It is just an historical fact. The things to do there now include, Lucy.
The things to do now.
Yes.
At Little Bunda.
You can take a Zorb ball ride. there are drumming lessons and sewing circles. So
it's all fertility related. It has, you know.
That's right. And where is it situated in Victoria, Stace?
It's in the gold mining area.
Yeah.
All the best towns.
Yeah. I've got a feeling a lot of these might be in the gold mining area.
The next one is that wonderful Western Australian town, Pooligooley.
Pooligooley got its name because it had an incredibly large swimming pool. And when it was very cold, with a certain amount of shrinkage, it got the nickname Pooligooley.
And what can you do now at pool? What's there at pool?
Unfortunately, the pool is dry.
Oh.
But it's used as a skateboard ramp. So that's great for the community.
Silver linings, people.
Yeah, that's a recycling project there. And finally, Little Pie Falls.
Oh, well, this has got to be my favourite. I adore little pies. And I love it when they fall into my mouth.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stacey and Lucy. Now I've got this picture of this town. He just goes, his pies just fall down. Where are they coming from? Or do we not question that?
The bakery on the hill.
That's right. I thought it was God.
And that's the end of that round, so it's over to Christian. Can we please get a points update?
Yes, David, thank you very much. At the end of that round, by a Charles Manson nap, it's Scott McAteer in the lead.
Those naps go on forever.
Because people are comfy.
Quite. Now, our next round is called Stumble, Mumble or Bumble. The players are challenged to give impromptu responses to ridiculous topics. If they stumble, mumble or bumble, other members of the panel can make a noise like this. Oh, yes. Oh, that made a really lovely noise. Let's do that again. Physics. Something. They could do that noise and to take over the topic, or alternatively, I can make a noise like this to end the question or pass it on to another unsuspecting player. First speaker is Lucy, and your topic is, if you were a TV channel, what would you be?
Oh, now I was going to say a sex channel, but then I don't think that that's very appropriate. So I would definitely go for reality TV, possibly some sort of sexual overtones of... I don't know why Stacey's laughing here beside me, but anyway. Some sort of thing about cooking and nakedness and...
Sorry, we've got to stop there. You mentioned cooking and nakedness. We can't possibly have that. I'm going to throw it over to Scott. Why are creaking noises so terrifying?
Oh, creaking noises are so terrifying. Because you don't know that if it's someone stalking through your house trying to kill you, or if it's your actual bones about to snap. Because they're being pushed from the inside by demonic entities, or the ghost of your grandmother who's still unhappy with you because you're never quite as good as she thought you could be. Why do you let her down? Let her down so much. She's going to break your legs because you let her down. And she knows that you were thinking of pushing her down the stairs that time.
You stumbled on some home truth there. Anna.
I think you should save this episode for the Halloween special.
It's always Halloween. Anna, mother's saliva is the ultimate solvent.
Mother's saliva, as your mother would know, can wipe everything off. I'm a bit disgusted with the visual, but, you know, spit into the hanky and clean up your face. That's what you mean, isn't
it? Yes, that's exactly what
mother's
I mean.
Mother's saliva, like Mother Teresa or mother's saliva?
I've never tried, but is there a difference between Mother Teresa's saliva and a regular
mother? Yeah, there's the Protestant
mother? Nun. Yeah.
Mother saliva of Seville. And Mother Teresa.
So I just want to know, what was Mother Saliva's miracles, if she had any?
She made the dry moist.
The dry voice?
The dry moist.
Oh, dry moist.
I'm really, really repulsed by everything I have said.
We'll save you from there. Stacey, why is it called a green room?
It is called a green room historically because people smoked weed in there to get in the mood before they went on stage. Sadly, this has now been deemed illegal and stuff. So now that...
See, that's what they want you to think. It's actually a green room because they were initially set up by the Zeta Reticulans when they first visited Earth. They've set up the green room, and it's the preparation room where they acclimatise you to their alien skin.
We all know those what were they called?
Zeta Reticula.
We know the Zeta Reticulas are fabulous.
They were great dancers. They were.
Well, they've got 10 legs. Fabulous. I'm going to throw it over to Anna. If Mussolini came round for tea...
I would serve him cannoli because I'd want to give him something Italian so as not to offend him. Mm. And everybody likes cannoli because it's crunchy and then it's got the cream in the middle and you can have chocolate ones or vanilla ones, or if you're on MasterChef, you'd probably have a Mexican-themed one with an avocado twill and crackling.
And on the end of that, well, big round of applause for the panel. And at the end of that stumble, mumble or bumble, Christian, can you tell me who is in the lead?
Yes, I can. At the end of that round, it's Anna Renzenbrink by cannoli.
Thank you very much.
That's at least worth 2 pasta shells.
That's cannelloni, you idiot.
She was just giving you a grain of truth, Dave.
I'm sorry it had to be said. And I'm sorry you've all turned on me, audience. You should have turned on me earlier when I was talking about saliva.
We're a big saliva-loving audience here. That's the thing. So moving on to... we're almost to the end of the program now, but before we find out who won today's show, it's now time to reveal the answer to our grain of... Cruth? What? That does sound like a monster.
So you're going to say grain of crudity.
The Scottish version of this show is
grain of cruth. Before we find out who won today's show, it is now time to reveal the answer to our grain of truth connection challenge. Firstly, did anyone on the panel get a connection between Anna, Tim, Lucy, and Stacey?
Well, I can tell you, if it's got Stacey in it, it's either cheerleading or porn.
Can it be both?
I should have said, yes. Right.
Any other connections?
I think they're characters in Enid Blyton novels.
Yeah, I want to say Peanuts. Something cartoony with, like, kid characters. Mm.
Well, I think, Scott, you are the closest because the connection we've got is Disney. We've got Princess Anna of Arendelle, who's the protagonist in Disney's Academy Award-winning film Frozen. Mm. Scott Kelvin is the name of Tim Allen's character in The Santa Claus. Former toy executive, then Santa Claus himself. What a interesting set of arrangements that happened.
Sounds madcap.
isn't it ever? Oh, I say, this is awfully madcap, is what the patrons of the cinematorium would say. Stacey is a character in the 1995 feature film A Goofy Movie and features prominently in the opening song After Today. Lucy is a goose who appears in the 1961 film 101 Dalmatians. Aww. So there you are. You are all very worthy. There we go. And so after that connection, it's over to Christian to announce who is today's winner of the Golden Betamax player.
Thank you, David. After that, the winner of the Golden Betamax player is... Scott McAteer! Yay!
Congratulations, Scott. It's only taken you 7 shows, but well done. what are you going to do with your Golden Betamax player?
I'm going to watch Breakdance 2 Electric Boogaloo. And then Police Academy 6.
You know, everything's got to be better when it's titled the word Boogaloo or a go-go in it.
Gosh, David's got an electric boogaloo happening to him right now.
Oh, please, I was trying to keep that private. And now that's... I'm sorry. My boogaloo keeps showing.
You've got a short circuit in you. Oh, I'm going to watch Short Circuit too. That's going to be crazy.
Okay.
That's the end of the program, and I hope you enjoyed it. You can come and see the recording on the first Saturday of the month at 1 p.m. at the Wesleyan. Our website is www.grainoftruth.com.au, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/grainoftruthshow, and on Twitter at grainoftruths. And now leaves me to thank our panel, Anna Rensenbrink, Scott McAteer, Lucy Schmidt, and Stacey Taylor, our announcer Christian Bazzari, our composer Matthew Hadcraft, our logo designer Tom Markovich, our sound restorer Armin Petit, Damien Sutton, and the Wesleyan. I have been your host, David Ennis. Have a splendid day! This has been a tetrifying production.